I must tell you that ever since Tump has become the podcast of choice for the grocery run, that the other customers in the supermarket are looking at me like I'm crazy.
They probably should.
Well, like, I'm giggling to myself in the cereal aisle. I feel like a warped version of Jeremy Renner at the end of Hurt Locker.
Well, I mean, I do that all the while at work. I mean, just the other day, I was listening to a podcast. I won't plug for the sake of, you know, making sure you don't give away money to other people. To which I was hearing someone logic out the fact that female masturbation should be called jilling, since since we call male masturbation jacking.
Right. Okay. But see, the thing is, I'm okay with this in an office. My office already knows that I'm nuts. These are complete strangers who are just trying to buy their produce and are looking at the crazy guy laughing with the headphones in his ears.
Oh.
This is all because of you. And your co-hosts, of course. Welcome to Wherever You Are. My name is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to episode 79 of the Matinee Cast. It's the movie-loving podcast of my movie-loving website, thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. My friends, the film studios have abandoned us. They have said amongst themselves that nobody wants to brave the cold of February to go see a movie, and they have given us absolute tripe this time of year to try and choose between. There is nothing good out there to see, I promise you. And because there's nothing good out there to see, we have had to go to home video. And to evoke the tripe that the studios have given us, we're going to something tripe-like on home video, but that is getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. What I will say to begin the show is this, that the epic film on home video that we are going to talk about today was championed, hailed, basically forced upon me by my guest today, who is now a three-time guest, and is always good for a fun time every time he's back. I should probably just bring him on as a permanent co-host if it wasn't for the fact that he hosts his own show. We are across a wire again tonight to Trinidad, where I'm pleased to welcome back for his third appearance, G-Man himself, Andrew Robinson, back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, man. Can I tell you how surprised I am? Because on my second appearance, it was like a 2-year gap. This is like 6 months. What's going on? Like,
you're one of my go-tos, really. I've got two or three of them. I wish you lived closer so I could just like bring you over and we could rap about this in person.
We can talk about that later.
Sure, of course we can.
Also, the whole smuggling process needs to be worked.
I was going
to
say, I'll sponsor some immigration forms. It's all okay. On episode 79, we will be discussing the FP. Buckle up, folks. We'll be taking listener feedback on underrated dumb action films, and we'll be turning the record over to play the other side. Before that, we need to learn a little bit more about the G-Man. This is Know Your Enemy. Hey, yo, so check this out. You know, before we get into Know Your Enemy, it saddens me a little bit that I had to listen to another podcast to figure out where the name G-Man came from. when that conversation happened, I sat there saying, son of a bitch, the guy's been on my show twice and I haven't asked.
Well, the only other person who's ever asked me that was on a completely other podcast. I was asked by Dave Chen when I was on the Slash Film Cast many years ago. But that is a topic which I don't think we ever talk about with the podcast, because most of them all know where it came from. If they don't, they knew its existence from many years ago because it was a big part of my email handle.
I missed the boat. What can I say? Mm-hmm. On episode 18, we learned that the first film Andrew had ever seen was The Nightmare Before Christmas. The last film he'd seen at the time was The Long Goodbye. The worst film he'd ever seen was The Man Who Fell to Earth. The unseen classic or essential was Schindler's List, which the man has now seen, thanks to my Blind Spot series. And the films, plural, he wished he'd seen were Reservoir Dogs in a positive light and Predators in a negative light so that he could fix it. Then, on episode 67, the film that Andrew likes that nobody else does is Speed Racer. And actually, there's quite a few people who like that, I've found out since then. The film that everybody else likes that he does not is Rear Window. The movie that makes him cry is The Fountain. The person who would play him in the movie of his life is Jason Segel. And the film he was going to watch next was The Seventh Seal. Here comes round three. Andrew, sir, what is the film that made your love for movies turn a corner?
There are actually a lot of movies I could pick for this kind of a question, but I think the one that at the end of the day kind of makes the most sense to me is The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. It was a very cold 2004. I had just left Jamaica for the very first time for more than like a week when I decided somewhat stupidly to go and get an education over in Appleton, Wisconsin. And I somehow in my third semester decided to take a class on German film, and more focused on pre-World War German film. And the first film we ever watched in that class was The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And at this point I was just auditing the class. I was because it was a third year course and I was a freshman, and I was just curious to see whether I could manage this course. I had always liked movies, but I had never really thought about them in an academic sense or any sort of way. I don't think at that point I'd even actually actively ever watched a black and white movie, much less a silent film. And somehow I was able to leave that first class when we watched the movie just riveted. I couldn't understand how a movie with zero dialogue, some tinted colors in the screen that they obviously had to do years later before anyone ever saw it, and just a piano background could make me this invested in what I was seeing. And I've never turned back. So and the weirdest part is I've never rewatched that movie.
I don't think that's the kind of movie you throw on just for shits and giggles, to be honest, even though believe it or not, actually, I haven't seen it, but it's, and I'm sure there are people who do throw it on for shits and giggles, but it kind of seems to me to be the sort of movie that you're a little bit more in a mood to watch.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess the weird part for me is the context of how I saw it, especially the discussion that came out. I mean, we even ended up talking about how Rob Zombie ripped it off for one of his music videos, and we watched it, and it was so weird.
Well, yeah, that would certainly make you turn a corner. And like, you, what did you say? You were 19?
I was 18 years old.
Yeah, so, you know, you probably come from seeing film, you know, maybe as something somewhat intellectual, certainly as a source of entertainment. And yeah, all of a sudden you're watching it and it's something that you're seeing as an art form. That would definitely change your whole perspective on it, no?
Definitely. Completely.
Well, good answer, man. What was your first date movie?
So now I don't even know how bad this is going to look on me, because from the movie I'm about to name, you're going to tell the year and you're going to be like, how did that math add up, right?
That's fine, man. I am not here to judge. Well, I am, but I'm not here to judge that harshly.
So I'm actually going to name two movies because they were my first dates for two individuals, right?
New player.
The first one, which was technically first chronologically, but I don't really even think of it as it was a date, if you understand my feeling. I went and I watched Ray with my first girlfriend, and that was just a brilliant movie, which I own on DVD, and I can't tell you the last time I actually ever watched it, but I remember, because we went with a bunch of friends that week to see the movie, and I remember seeing like friends with me just like playing the piano along and singing and enjoying themselves and fun. But if you really want to say my first date movie, where I was like properly taking this girl out on a date and we went to the movies without all my friends,
right,
was many moons later, because I don't know how I'd really categorize it, but all of my movie moments back then weren't really going to the movie dates. This one was the first, and it was The Heartbreak Kid. And as you can tell from the name and the movie, if you've ever seen it, is it was probably a movie which was a date, because there's no other fucking way I'd watch it. I just broke it.
You didn't even choose that one. Okay. Let's quickly take these one at a time here. So okay, Ray is a good movie. So we could start with that. And you went like with the group? Was it one of these things where like it's kind of like everybody's going together, but you and the girl kind of like each other, so it's kind of an assumed date? And
yeah,
like, was everybody having fun at least?
everyone was having fun and we all enjoyed it. And that was definitely the situation, which is why I kind of felt the need to mention the next one.
Right.
To kind of give a better understanding to the question.
Okay. See, I've been on that kind of date before in the past, but it was usually like it was never like the first outing. It was more like after we'd been seeing each other for a few weeks, it was like, let's get our friends in on this too. So that one's a little bit different for me.
Well, with her, for every other moment like that, which would have been movie related, it was all home video. So.
Mm. Right. Okay. And then,
and I don't know if we count that in this whole discussion.
No. And then okay. And then the heartbreak kid. Tell me, she chose that.
She did completely. And the weirdest part about it, and I guess this is something that we can all kind of relate to, is that I kind of came away from that movie not hating it as much as I should have, mainly because I enjoyed myself going on that date in the first place.
I was going to say, was it at least a good date? Because Lord knows it wasn't a good movie.
I'd like to say it was.
Okay, I'll take it. I'm not going to ask her. I'm going to take your word for it. What's your sick day movie?
I'm going to have to go straight up for The Blues Brothers because I don't know any other movie that makes me smile as much as this one. From all of the cameos, including Ray Charles, who can see a child attempting to steal from his store.
You know, I've never thought about that joke before.
Are you serious? He shoots at the child and misses him nearly.
I know.
Because he
intended to. Don't get me wrong, I could recite that movie, but I always thought that he had like some sort of spidey sense that the child was ripping him off. I never thought that it was actually, you know, the part of it was that he sees what the kid is doing.
And you know what's the best part? Watching it multiple times and like listening to commentaries, I found out watching this movie in that same scene. You remember previously Elwood and Jake going to Aretha Franklin's yep. shop and they asked for toast and chicken and such, right? Yeah. If you watch that scene with Ray, you see Elwood kind of walking around aimlessly for a little bit and he sees a toaster.
And he puts the toast in.
Bread out of his jacket.
Yes.
And when I discovered that little gem in that seed, it just works.
Yes, yes. Reaches into his coat, takes out two pieces of white Wonder Bread, and just drops them into the toaster. It is You don't even have to explain that one to me. That is definitely one I could see as a sick day movie. And it's a personal favorite actually. So good call for sure. That would definitely make me feel better on a sick day. What was the last film to leave you speechless?
Oh man, we're gonna have to go there because it's Oscar Schindler.
Oh well. Okay, you're welcome.
And apologies, sir, for not giving you your due cred. It's what you expect from a movie like that, where you're watching it, and for the whole runtime, you can't say or do anything. You're just glued to the screen, and it's presenting this image to you, and you're left baffled at the fact that you can't move away, you can't utter a word, you can't even let your jaw shake enough for the tears to roll down correctly. It's perfect to make things plain.
And yet through like just the emotional carnage it leaves you in, it is absolutely stunning to watch and to listen to. And as I left a comment on your site, that when you inevitably go back and revisit it and you're able to kind of watch it from a more clinical perspective, and you start looking at how it's cut and how it's shot and how it's scored and all these little touches, and you just look at just all the marvel of a movie that it is. That's a movie that could leave you speechless for any number of reasons.
It's one of those movies where, as you said, speechless. When it's done, you're just kind of left to wander in your own head to kind of put these pieces together as to how many times it just hit you right in the gut.
Yeah, that's actually a film. That's one of the few Spielberg films I never got to see on a big screen. So I am kind of always keeping my eye open that one day I get a chance to watch it. And I have a hunch it'll hit me a little bit harder when I do.
Yeah, let's keep making me feel bad for not living in towns like you.
Sorry, man. All right, last but not least, what's the movie quote that would be your epitaph?
Oh, there's so many that I could pick from. I mean, there's I wouldn't want to be in any group that would have me as a member. There's if we admit that human life can be ruled by reason, then all possibility of life is destroyed. There's the one that you would definitely know. I've been listening to my gut since I was 14 years old, and frankly speaking, I've come to my conclusion that my guts are shit for brains. But the one that my brain said, Andrew, you have to take it, is let's go someplace like Bolivia, because that's what you want to tell your best friend every time. you want to look at what you're doing around you, and you want to always say, hey, let's go someplace like Bolivia. It doesn't have to be Bolivia, but someplace like it.
Right. That is fantastic. For anybody who doesn't already know, that, of course, is from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And it is a great quote. That is a lot more about Andrew Robinson. Thank you, sir. Those are some great answers. I'm loving the third round. You're only the third person who's got to do the third round. But I'm really loving it because I get to learn a lot more about the individual guests.
I'm still afraid of that math test.
I don't know what I'm going to do for round four, man. I tremble at the thought of people like you and Matthew Brown and Mariah Gates coming back on the show, because I got to come up with five new questions, and even coming up with three more questions was tough enough. So I'm just going to take it as it comes. We'll be right back after this with your feedback from episode 78, your chance to come talk to me. Why are you shaking? Last episode, I asked about people's favorite big, dumb action movies, mostly because I was under the impression that I might be using this episode to talk about Die Hard 5. How is that, by the way? Is that as terrible as it seems?
It's god-awful. Okay. Like, it kind of makes me feel all the emotions that people must have felt in 1990 when Die Hard 2 came out.
I like Die Hard 2.
Oh, well, you're wrong.
Oh, fine. So I thought it was going to be about that. But the other thing was that a week after I recorded episode 78, I was going to see a screening of Point Break. So I was going to see a big, dumb action movie. And I wanted to talk about people's big, dumb action movies. And I got some great responses. James Blake Ewing, the highbrow master himself, came back with an answer. And he said, for his favorite dumb action movie, I guess it depends on what you define as dumb and action. In any case, I'll choose Speed Racer, a film that's high on style and spectacle and has a childish sensibility that brings out the 10-year-old in me every time I see it. Yes, the story is corny and melodramatic, which is part of the reason why I enjoy it, but I defy you to find a more visually excessive and delightful action sequence than any of the racing scenes in this film. You just flat out like this movie. It's not, you don't even need the qualifiers of big and dumb.
You see, the funny part is I feel we should start a game where every time I come on this podcast, Speed Racer has to be mentioned.
I should probably just dedicate an episode to Speed Racer. I'll figure out a way to like get people on to talk about like their favorite movies or something, and just bring you on for the Speed Racer episode. On Facebook, Nick Hat Zahura said, the first Transformers, I still think it's fun. You know, I'm almost ashamed to admit this, but I actually like the first Transformers.
I remember seeing something similar when the movie came out, and then, like many people, Transformers 2 came out, and then I kind of just didn't want to think about Transformers ever again.
No, but I mean, like, I still own a copy. Like, I might actually have to rewatch it soon and see if it's one that I should turf. But I remember just for what it is, I remember enjoying it.
Okay, so you've heard my co-host probably say this, but I'll remind you. When you rewatch that movie, just think about this as it happens.
Okay.
Megatron crashes in space. He's fine. He crashes on Earth, a warmer climate, and freezes over.
Gotcha. I'll remind myself of that. My friend Melissa Pisner said the Crank series, Jason Statham, kind of makes him watchable. I haven't seen any of the Crank films. Have you?
I adore those movies for the madness that they are. Okay. I'm still waiting for the third, where he has to run around town constantly making himself more wet And in order to
are you
not
making this up or is this coming?
No, if you watch these movies and when you get to the end of two, you'll understand this a bit more, where he has to keep himself constantly wet in order not to overheat while chasing down somebody. And that will obviously lead into the gratuitous sex scene with his random girlfriend in public, which has to be in a crack movie.
Of course. My friend Beth Beard said, shoot him up. Ridiculous movie, but I couldn't stop watching it. She also digs Smokin' Aces, which was also pretty dumb, but action-packed. I've seen Smokin' Aces. That was silliness for what it was. Shoot 'em Up I've never seen, but I've heard good things about.
I'm not a big fan of Smokin' Aces. I mean, it felt like a bit too much and a bit
cast,
too average. It's all right. I mean, what do you got there? Ray Liotta and Ryan Reynolds and everyone else is a rapper. but I'm going to give Shoot 'em Up all the credit needs, because, I mean, when you've got Clive Owen walking around with a carrot that shoots people, it's great.
Winner. My old friend Calvin Mahadio, who you would love, next time you come to town, I got to introduce you to this guy. He went with Commando. So many one-liners and unnecessary killings. What a win. I've never seen Commando.
I saw that around like 2 or 3 weeks ago for the first time. It was before I went to watch the new Schwarzenegger movie, okay, which is a relatively fun movie.
Does it hold up?
It's so fun if you're into that kind of movie. If you're the kind of person who watched Predator repeatedly.
Okay.
It's not as good as Predator, but it's just so ridiculous.
Alrighty. Red George said The Rundown, David Bishop, True Lies. Courtney Small said Speed, which I haven't watched in a long time. Daniel Fogarty from Fogue's Movie Reviews and the Title Pending Movie Podcast said Point Break, baby. And finally on Facebook, I got a response from Donkey Wrangler to the Stars saying, Die Hard 2 and Beverly Hills Cop 2, there's nothing more dumb than a Hollywood sequel. Donkey Wrangler to the Stars. I think that's a site. Either that
I
or my spam is answering
means.
Me. I don't know either, but I was like, I got to mention that. from Twitter, my brother Shane said The Killing Fields and then wondered if he was doing that right. I don't think you are, Shane, but thank you. Alexander Hall said probably Deep Blue Sea or Deep Rising. What's Deep Rising?
Deep Rising, I know that movie. I know it, but my brain isn't bringing it up. It sounds very familiar.
Wait, I have the internet now.
Steven Sommers movie, that's a good tell. Famke Janssen.
A group of heavily armed hijackers board a luxury ocean liner in the South Pacific to loot it, only to do battle with a series of large-sized, tentacle, man-eating sea creatures who have taken over the ship first.
Holy shit, I need to find this movie
now. Oh my god. Alexander Hulls for the win. Oh my goodness, I think I need to see that. Rachel West, my future sister-in-law, said, Armageddon, one day I'm confident Bruce Willis will save us all from impending doom. I'm a sucker for Armageddon. If that thing comes on TV, I'm not going anywhere.
I mean, all you need to do is hear three chords of the Aerosmith song, and you're
exactly.
Golden.
Yeah, pick out the animal crackers. We're not leaving. Miss Typo on Twitter said she's always been a fan of The Running Man. Once Sub-Zero, now Plain Zero. Such cheesy fun. And finally, our friend Brian J. Rowan from Dear Film said, Lockout, the biggest, dumbest, most amazingly fun action movie I've seen in ages. Startlingly stupid. You're a fan of that, aren't you? Of Space Jam?
And there's a correction in there, sir. There's a correction. That movie is not called Lockout. It is referred to only as Space Jail, and I will only accept that title.
Fair enough. What is? We've talked about a lot of them, and I'm sure I won't be surprised by the answer, but what is your favorite big, dumb action movie?
The one that comes to mind every time I think of this title is It Has to Go to Con Air. I mean, put the bunny back in the box.
Yes.
It's so perfect. But there are a few others. I mean, if you go into John Woo, you're perfect. Every time I watch The Killer, I just smile to death. And then nothing can be talked about bad action movies if you don't talk about The Muscles from Brussels, which brings us Bloodsport. It's It's the movie we all want to be in. We all want to be Jean-Claude kicking the crap out of these people. And that massive, I can't even remember the character's name anymore, the massive American with the beard, who we just don't understand how he's in a martial arts competition. And worse, how Forrest Whitaker just appears in this movie. Like, I'm pretty sure at the time, no one knew his name, but retroactively, we all sit and stare and we wonder, oh, Forrest, we now understand why you do the things you do today.
Well, and then, you know, I'm sure somebody saw him in that and then cast him in Ghost Dog. You know what I'm saying? It's funny, you know, with the John Woo, I'm good with the, I don't even consider the killer dumb or hard-boiled dumb. We're going to talk about dumb John Woo. You got to go with Face Off on that, man.
Oh, I have that written down here, but I just like talking about so much more.
There is nothing, like, Face Off, that is one of my all-time favorite action movies, period. Big Dumb or no, I that is endlessly quotable. It is.
Was it the same year as The Rock?
Face Off and Con Air were the same summer. That was same summer. Oh, my goodness. I remember this now. Con Air came out in like May, and then Face Off came out in July, and it was marvelous. The summer of 97 was a wonderful time for movies because you got
Andrew was only 11. Couldn't go to the movies.
Oh, I was there, buddy. I one of the two. I actually took my girlfriend at the time, and I had seen it already. I was like, you got to see this.
So you win on date movies. You win.
Oh, I took her to see some crap, dude. I'm not even getting into that. but yeah, that was my favorite. Well, mine actually, to kind of complete the Nicolas Cage trilogy, my favorite big dumb action movie from the year before is The Rock. Michael Bay, 1996, Sean Connery going full Connery. He's got the heavy Scottish accent, of course. Nicolas Cage acting all nerdy and twitchy. You've got Michael Biehn is in the movie. He's like the head Navy SEAL who buys it in the first scene. It's a marvel, that movie. I was lucky enough a few years ago to get the Criterion edition of that as a birthday gift.
I want the Criterion, but they have to re-release it on Blu-ray. I already own it on Blu-ray, and I love that movie so much.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Like every. It's got some great action. I love the car chase. Is one of my favorite car chases with the Humvee and the Ferrari through the streets of San Francisco.
Do you like the Rocket Man?
It's you. You're the Rocket Man. That's another one I'm going to need to watch. I'm going to watch the Michael Bay double feature, Transformers and The Rock, before this show goes up. You watch. You're going to see that show up on my Letterboxd. Well, for next episode, to kind of turn it in a slightly different direction, actually it kind of suits what we were talking about with John Woo, is I want folks to name a director that needs to return to their roots. I'm pretty sure the next episode we're going to be talking about Oz the Great and Powerful, which of course is directed by Sam Raimi, and it doesn't really feel true to the kind of movies that Sam Raimi made his name on. So, I think while we'd all like to see Sam Raimi make more stuff like Army of Darkness and Drag Me to Hell, you know, I'm sure we'd like to see him do more movies like that, but right now he's doing stuff for Disney. So tell me, on Twitter, Facebook, ryan@thematinee.ca, what is a director that you think needs to return to their roots? Well, after this, we're coming back with the new slang. The new slang is readily available on DVD and Netflix this time around. Prepare yourself for the FP.
For the ducks!
All right, here goes nothing. The FP is directed by Brandon and Jason Trost. It is also written by Brandon and Jason Trost. It stars Jason Trost, Art Sue, Lee Valmassi, Caitlin Foley, and a bunch of other people that you haven't heard of either. Andrew, this was your selection, so why don't you put your Caribbean magic to the work here and explain to people what the FP is about?
Okay, so I'm sure all of you have seen movies such as Mad Max. But what if these movies existed in a world in which your only currency was beat revelations? And I'm sure you heard what I said and you didn't quite understand it. You're like, what's that? It's DDR, just a non-copyrighted name. Beat Beat Revelations, in which gangsters have to play to the death to such that they can 187 each other and their characters die in the movie. This movie is atrocious. But as far as I'm concerned, grading movies from F to A is not a straight line. It is a circle. And if you become bad enough a movie, you can move from an F to an A.
Okay. So, yeah, just so we're clear here, we are in a world where there are two halves of this random middle America town. And they're of course they're fighting by area code to control Fraser Park. That would be the FP. And they do so by battling, kind of like what you saw in 8 Mile, except they do it by Beat Beat Revelation, not Dance Dance Revolution. So in the first scene, we see a dude watch his brother die mid-dance while the game is basically taunting him about how badly he's doing. Which swears him off the whole game.
It goes into Omega Gangster mode.
Yes, right, of course. Omega Gangster mode. And so he swears off the game and he goes to work at a lumberyard, only to be found a few years later by, like, the master of ceremonies. That's his buddy.
His name is KCDC.
Right. Yes, of course. who is wondering why his friend wasn't responding to his pages, and says things got worse than ever. You need to come back and battle for control of the FP. I put up on Twitter that this whole experiment of watching this film for this podcast might have been a gigantic mistake. And when you asked me how far into the movie I was, I believe I told you I was 11 minutes and 30 seconds in.
And when I was watching the movie yesterday, revisiting it, and I stopped at around 11 minutes, and that's exactly where we get J-Tro doing the typical action no scream as he watches his brother die on the Beat Beat Revelations.
I'll never play Beat Beat Revelation again.
And it's weird to see that because you immediately feel like this guy is a 10-year-old who just got his toy taken away from him. Yes. But it's so funny.
Now tell me something, because you're more well-versed in this movie than I am. This is my one actual question that I didn't actually understand. This movie's a lot of things, but the one thing it's not is complicated. And the one thing I didn't get, though, is what are those boots that they put on? What are they supposed to do?
They are 100% nigga boots. Right?
What?
And no. if you think I'm being horrible, they actually define it in the movie. Nigga meaning never ignorant in getting goals accomplished. Right?
Now you're making shit up. Come on, really?
It's there. It's in there. The movie doesn't explain how these boots help him become the greatest Beat Beat Revelation player of all time.
Oh my god. But
it is so ridiculous.
And the thing is, right? they look absurd. That's the thing, too. Like, you can sort of see it on the poster. But they come up to his knee. They look like he should be going outside into, like, you know, snow. They don't look like you could really move in them, and yet they make him awesome.
They're great. I mean, it looks like he is lifting 500-pound legs every time he walks.
Oh, boy. You know, the one thing I will say that was amusing me about this movie, and I don't want people to mistake the joy that is sounding in my voice because I can hear it. It's not – I'm not smiling because of joy. I'm smiling because of incredulousness. The one thing that I did, though, enjoy about the movie is that there's always something going on in the background. Did you notice that?
Oh, it's crazy there. I mean, I think one of my favorite like background moments that makes absolutely no sense in a visual way, or like why would you show that other than to be incredibly like just over the top, is we see twice. There's a moment where he first comes back to the foundation and we see all of these women drunk off their ass, and there's this one woman who's just like randomly topless.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then
she keeps falling out of her shirt.
Right. And then it comes back at the end during the final dance off, where through the montage of them like just swooping cameras of them dancing and sweating, J-Tro and LWE, you see the woman just pop out of nowhere with a guy squeezing her breast, and you're just like, why is that there? But it just pops out at you, and when I see it, I laugh. I know I'm broken, but I laugh.
Oh, man. No, it's there's moments like that. It's just basically every time two people are having a conversation, look behind them, because I guarantee you something dumb is happening. Now, the one thing that I will kind of underline with this movie, I don't completely hate that you pointed me in this movie's direction. It wasn't a complete waste of time. But the one thing I would say is the one thing we need to take into account here is the FP is the kind of movie that plays really well when you get a bunch of people together and you have a few beers and you watch it all and you just laugh your ass off at it. It's not the kind of thing that I would say to people, cue it up and just watch it on your own on a Friday night.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, I think I kind of made that clear with my circle description.
Apparently, like, it was kind of funny. The movie that I think of most readily when I think of this. Now, they were trying to make this like a spoof, right? This wasn't the kind of thing that they just massively failed.
No, this is when you see a movie like this, it is nothing other than someone who has intentionally decided to make everything that horrendous only to highlight how bad certain other movies are.
So right? It was kind of funny because the movie I thought about most readily after this was a movie that unintentionally did that, and that was The Room.
Which is a movie I still to this day have not seen.
Get the boys over, get as many substances as you guys want to consume, and just buckle up. But it has to be seen to be believed. But the thing, like that's the difference. Is don't get me wrong, like movies like this, or did you ever see Haozu?
Once again, not yet.
Get the boys over, get the substances, you'll be fine. And that's the thing. Like, we can say the FP is a lot of fun and fun to watch and everything like that, but I would never sit here and say this is a good movie. This is sort of something that needs to be seen to be believed. Right? Even like the text they use in the opening crawl looks like something that James Cameron road tested for Terminator and said, no, that's too crappy.
And do you know who narrated said text?
No.
The wonderful James Remar.
Who?
James Remar. He is the father in Dexter. He was in Django Unchained as two different characters.
Right. Actually, you can answer me a question. How in the world did they get Clifton Collins Jr. to show up for a minute in this movie? Because he shows up out of nowhere with a ridiculous rainbow wig on.
And attempting to sell me some black dick, because that's what I need.
Yes, that's right.
Right, you see, this is where you need to be, Ryan. Right, you start off going, look, this movie is horrendous, but you can't even lie to me right now if I ask you, based on how we're going with this conversation, you know you're enjoying yourself.
Well, okay, let's put it this way. I'll really make you laugh here. You think what I tweeted there was one thing? I started watching this film when I was home by myself one evening, and I had forgotten that Lindsay wanted to watch it as well. So when she walked in, I said she noticed what I was watching. She goes, I thought we were going to watch that together. And I said, well, I can restart it if you want. She goes, yeah, okay, well, why don't we do that? I had got 45 minutes into this movie. I had gone exactly halfway. And I backed up, watched those opening 45 minutes all over again.
And your life was so much better for it.
Oh, yeah. I could think of a lot of words, a lot better.
My only question is, did Lindsay like it?
Oh, she loved it, man. I'm sure it's on order right now.
Oh.
Now, I need to ask you, how in the world did you find this film?
it was one of these random trailers that people posted up where they're kind of mocking it, going, look how horrible this movie is. And I saw it, and it wasn't until like midway last year where Draft House Films picked it up. And I was middling with the idea of getting onto their subscription program, which I still haven't done. But I wanted the FP to be the testbed because that was the new Blu-ray they had just released, where I was like, okay, I'll give that movie a try because I know already that they're going to be the different people, the people who are picking up the movies that no one else will buy, and they'll buy like crazy ass movies. And the FP looks like one of those. Will it hit the mark that I believe it does? And I thought it hit it perfectly.
All right. Well, before we get to a rating of this thing, we end the review with a souvenir. So, Andrew, you have your pick, of course. but what would be your souvenir of the FP?
There's so many things. There's the fact that they use pagers. There's the fact that when they have a gunfight at the end of the movie, we have KCDC using a slingshot. There's the fact that every time KCDC walks into a room, his mic works. It doesn't make any sense. But I think it's obvious as to the moment in this movie that we're always going to walk it. It's the moment that made me realize why Jamaica isn't a great place. I mean, yes, it is a wonderful country and I love it. It's my home. It's beautiful. But there are lots of problems. And I think it's because we don't have any ducks. So every time you think there's something wrong, just remember you need some bums so they can feed the ducks in the park. And you can't do shit in life unless you can sort out your shit with some ducks. It's for the ducks, Ryan. For the ducks.
Well, that is, listen, I did have a smile on my face when they started talking about that, because finally a lot of your references made sense. But for me, the possibly the most absurd moment in this symphony of absurdity comes during a conversation. We neglected to mention that J-Tro has a love interest named Stacy. And at one point, they're having this little heart-to-heart in a park. And I think J-Tro is sitting on a swing, and Stacy is sitting in front of him in the dirt of the playground, and she's kind of sifting, or like she's like sifting around through the dirt, and you kind of think like I think J-Tro even asks her, "What are you doing? Are you building a sandcastle?" And no, she's actually looking for a tampon. She says every once in a while, one of them gets left here in the dirt. Let that sink in for a second.
But her storyline is one of the most asinine things.
Well, there's
this movie
that. But hold on. That alone. What are you doing? I'm sifting
and
around.
And worse,
for
the fact that you realize it made sense that someone gave him a tampon randomly
Okay, that's where it gets more absurd. Like that joke alone might have been moment enough for me to keep it as a souvenir. But wait, we're going to take it one step further, and J-Tro goes, "Oh, wait, I think I've got a spare one right here." And he reaches into his pocket, and sure enough, here you go. Oh my God, dude, I damn near lost it. In that moment alone, that might be the most absurd thing I have ever seen on film.
Oh, and one last thing, because of course it's the FP, I can't help continually talking.
Clearly,
is the fact that in a year gone by where we got to see Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln, this movie makes not one but two references to the Civil War, one of which involves comparing Beat Beat Revelations to the Civil War. The next involves them walking to their headquarters, where they go into a secret cave, which looks like a inside of a shipping cart or whatever it's called, shipping container.
Yep.
They take out torches, light them, walk not 2 seconds to put them out to go to their secret head, talking about it was a passage back in the Civil War, a secret passage, and then they used it for moonshining bootleggers. It's crazy.
Oh my God. Okay, I we need to move on because I'm never gonna get the taste of this thing out of my mouth otherwise. But I am almost afraid to ask. Andrew Robinson, on a scale of 1 to 4 stars, what do you give the FP?
Oh, this movie, if you've been listening to us for the last 20 minutes, you understand what this movie is and why this movie is a 4 out of 4 stars.
You're on drugs.
The circular scale.
You are on drugs. Yaman cassava, call it whatever you want to call it. You are high. Okay, listen, I will say this. As a visual spectacle and a night of drunken entertainment, this movie is a 3.5.
Oh, and just a side note, Brandon Trost, to help direct this movie, is also someone who did the cinematography for films like Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, Crank 2, Weather Girl, MacGruber.
Yeah.
So, Lords of Film. So, it's obvious as to why this movie looks as pretty as it does.
3.5 for spectacle. As an actual movie, this is a 1. But it needs to be seen to be believed. So the next time, anybody who's listening to this, the next time you want to get a bunch of people together, have a few drinks, and see something that you will howl laughing at, I promise you, think about watching the FP and send your mail of thanks down to Trinidad, care of G-Men Reviews. I'm sure they all know where to send it. And there we go. And if you do see it, email me or Facebook or Twitter or whatnot and let me know what you think, because I cannot be the only person who needs to witness this. Other people need to soak this up. But we're going to move on to other movies, both better and worse, in just a moment. So come on right back after this. We're going to flip the record over and play the other side. Choice of the other side, I wanted to go back to another movie that I really didn't like, that other people say is awesome, which I am staunchly still not in the mood to really defend. I'm going back to last year, to 2012, in October, I believe. Jason Moore directed a film called Pitch Perfect. Stars Anna Kendrick, Rebel Wilson, Skylar Astin, Brittany Snow, and other people who are young and pretty. And it's about an a cappella group in an American university. Now, I know a lot of people, including the lovely woman that I'm married to, love this movie with a capital L. But for me, this movie is utterly ridiculous. And I don't think it's ridiculous in the same way that the FP is ridiculous. I think that this movie is just flat out dumb. So in kind of retribution to what Andrew Robinson was putting me through with the FP, I said, okay, buddy, you're watching Pitch Perfect. Now, gauging by your tweets, I kind of feel like this backfired. How did Pitch Perfect land for you?
Well, the weirdest part is when I saw it in the theater, based on your wife's recommendations, I was very close to how you feel. Rewatching it this weekend, I kind of fell even more in love with the movie.
Oh, son of a bitch! Are you kidding?
I'm serious.
Why?
I mean, it really kicks off for me in the audition scene, because as Christopher Mintz-Plasse just appears in what I can only assume is what will be his greatest role of all time, even better than McLovin, the movie just piles on top of one another in its own ridiculousness, in mocking what was this popular now genre of musical, which I just don't get. I mean, I was one of the Glee followers in season one. By season three, I'm kicking it in the balls and asking it why it ever existed.
Right. But that's the thing. This movie kind of feels like it's of the same ilk. Don't get me wrong. It's really cool to see these pretty people singing songs and doing mashups and dusting off things like Ace of Base and certainly No Diggity. But the story is absurd.
So my question to you is, when the scene comes up of Anna Kendrick finally watching the final scene of Breakfast Club, don't tell me that doesn't hit you.
Well, it does. But here's my thing, okay? That is actually one of the underlining reasons why this movie failed. Let's call a spade a spade. If you're going to have the Stones to reference some of the greatest teen movies in your own teen movie, you better be bringing the goods. And Pitch Perfect does not bring the goods. They reference Breakfast Club over and over, because eventually they sing Don't You Forget About Me, and it's not nearly as good. I found myself getting taken back to Easy A 2 years ago, which did the same thing. It referenced a whole bunch of John Hughes movies. And that movie, for me, is the kind of thing that was written well enough and executed well enough that it will stand up in like 10 years when somebody else goes back and watches it. Pitch Perfect does not.
Watch it again.
So, I got a smile when they were saying, you know, some of the best movies were Jaws and doesn't he say Say Anything? Is it one of the ones he mentions as well?
I don't remember if he said
But I do remember anything. He mentions Breakfast Club. I got a smile when he was bringing those, but then I was like, wait a second, this movie can't pull this off.
You see, herein lies the thing. You have to buy into its own kind of craziness. And it's not so much like the FP. The FP is something that barrages you into accepting its madness. This movie is completely different. This movie is a film which it hands you a ridiculous version of what people are already into, and kind of lightly pushes you into noticing that it's stupid that people like this. And it kind of goes about it in a way that all you can, if you're not ready to see that aspect of the joke, it's just, you're just going to be so mediocre and hateful of this movie. But if you're ready to see it, if you see things like Rebel Wilson sideways walking, if you see things like people saying, I wanted the hotter version of this, if you see things like Elizabeth Banks, and for some reason, I know this is the wrong name, is it Fred Willard who's the other commentator?
Close, John Michael Higgins.
John Michael Higgins. I always mix them up for some reason.
It's an easy. he's the one you get when you can't get Fred Willard.
Doing the commentary, because like there's one point where they say something to the Elizabeth Banks in the early stages, says there's nothing to make you feel like a woman than a man singing like he's a boy. And yeah, it just kind of lands every time.
Okay, riddle me this. Remember this little plot point because you watched it again and loved it so much. When the girls are on their way in the bus to sectionals, first of all, let's pause and realize that this movie has the audacity to evoke Almost Famous and the Tiny Dancer moments. And it evokes Tiny Dancer with a friggin' Miley Cyrus song. What happens on the trip to sectionals? What is it that derails them on their way? Tell it to me once again so I can hear it for all its glory.
A Mexican burrito bomb.
Yes. This derails them for what reason? She's a little bit messier, but like she's not hurt. She
got distracted.
Distracted. It's a burrito. She didn't get hit.
If I come to Toronto and throw a burrito at you, you're going to stop what you're doing. And you're not going to remember if you finish it or not.
I'm going to stop what I'm doing for a minute, but I'm not going to get where I'm going. It's not the end of Carrie here. She got hit by a burrito. Oh, this is brutal. Oh, my God. No, this movie is for 15-year-olds. I swear to God. And they are going to look back at it when they're 30 and say, this thing is a piece of, to quote your co-hosts, this thing is hot garbage.
Actually, Damien quite enjoyed this movie. Douglas hasn't yet watched it.
Damien's on drugs.
we already knew that.
I didn't know that. I'm trying not to racially profile here is what I'm doing. I'm just going on your reactions to movies that I don't care for. This was my selection. So I get to choose a takeaway, strangely, even though I don't really want to. My takeaway is not going to be that I need to watch it again.
Is it on the shelf?
Oh, trust me. It has a place of honor on the shelf of doom. I think actually, and just to kind of prove, you know, what kind of relationship I have, even with this kind of disdain for this movie I have, I bought it as a gift for my blushing bride this past Christmas. So I said, here you go. Enjoy this. I never want to watch it. Okay, my takeaway would be this. For all the silliness and dumbassery that this movie trots out in 112 minutes, it does bring out some really good music. And as I said, like everything from Titanium by David Guetta to Ace of Base and No Diggity and Don't You Forget About Me. I'm not that big a fan of Turn the Beat Around, so I could have done without that. But that's the one thing I'll give it, is that for as dumb as this movie is, it is loaded with some good tunes. So it wasn't a complete miss. It was just a miss. But that's me. And Yeah, I'm glad you liked it, because one of us had to. I'll be right back after this with Andrew's choice for the other side, coming up right after this break. I should mention at this point that Andrew Robinson's original choice for the other side, as if he hadn't pounded me into the pavement enough with the FP, was something called The Tension from 2 years ago that was a high school... Was it a high school horror movie? Am I reading that right?
It is a lot of things. It's a movie about movies, to make it very, very vague and very bland, because okay, any genre of movie you can think of, there is a segment of this movie that is about.
Got it. Well, this movie is such an opus that it was not available for me on demand, was not available on Canadian Netflix, it was not available at my DVD rental shop of choice that actually has a very broad selection. So I'm now even more afraid of Detention than I was when you first suggested it. But when I told Andrew that I couldn't get my hands on Detention, I'm like, give me another choice. And in a swing of quality unmatched on the Pat and Acast in 79 episodes, he went to Edgar Wright's 2007 gem, and I'm using that term literally this time, not in a mocking tone, Hot Fuzz, which of course stars Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and is a send-up of the buddy cop genre. And if you've never seen it, I pity you, first of all. Now, you need to, I can kind of guess, but tell the listeners why it was that you chose this movie as your choice for the other side.
So herein lies the thing, right? With Hot Fuzz, it gives you the best version of what a spoof really is. It's one thing for people like myself to champion movies like the FP in the tone that I do. I mean, I don't think I ever sugarcoat it to try and lie to people and tell them, look, this is a bona fide Oscar contender. I don't think I've ever, not even to you, Ryan.
Tell yourself what you need to tell yourself, buddy.
Right? But the thing is that for the people out there who, when watching movies like this, get the joke, we get it. We don't need someone to explain it to us. And that's what I kind of hate so much about spoof movies such like Scary Movie 5 Billion or Meet the Spartans. They're movies which feel like all they're doing to their listener, to their viewers, are saying, you know, you watched 300, but you don't quite understand why people make fun of them. So we're going to help explain the joke to you right now. Instead, we get a movie like Hot Fuzz, where what it's doing is it's finding a space, a communal space for all of these fans of movies like Point Break, like Bad Boys, like... There's even a reference, which I didn't think I caught the first time I saw this movie, to Chinatown in this movie, where...
There is?
Where just... Yeah, there is, when Simon Pegg is leaving to then come back for the final barrage of fights. Nick Frost saves him and takes him out, and then he tells him to go away, and he says, Nicholas, forget it, it's Sanford. And that's just the moment, you know? And instead of trying to explain these jokes to the people, they already know we know it. We understand it. We're the people who champion Point Break and Bad Boys 2 and say these are movies you need to see, because as stupid as they are perfect gems of crazy movie making. And I feel like in another 10 years, we're going to be talking about the movie which is referencing the FP. And it's, I hope to dear God, it's going to be the Hot Fuzz version and not the Meet the Spartans version of references. Because then that's kind of why I caught around to bringing Hot Fuzz as my other side. I mean, I had other movies in line, but I felt like I have tortured Ryan enough.
I do appreciate that. You know, that like... There have been some brutal watches that I've endured for this podcast, and I'm thinking specifically of Johnny Suede, for instance. But the one thing I will tell you is, I don't know if this was on your mind or not. I don't think it could have been. Is watching Hot Fuzz just 1 week after I saw a screening of Point Break was a thing of beauty, because like every little reference, it just plays so much funnier and so much better after refreshing my memory of Point Break, because it must have been, Oh, buddy, it must have been 10 years in between viewings of Point Break for me. So things of like when he was saying, you ever jumped through the air and fired your gun? Have you ever, you know, have you ever pointed your gun up in the air, shot it and said, ah? So moments like that play beautifully. Somebody actually suggested, it might have been Corey Attag, because it's the kind of thing that he would suggest, that the perfect triple feature is for people to watch Point Break, Bad Boys 2, and then finish it with Hot Fuzz.
That would probably be fantastic.
That would be my version of heaven. Now, I think you kind of touched on it already. The difference, of course, is that Hot Fuzz is a spoof that still stands as its own movie. I can kind of chalk that up to like the writing abilities of Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright. I think it also has to do with like the story they chose to tell. They could tell how far they could really push the parody. You know, like there's a lot of moments where they're just completely sending up all these stupid action movies. Like every time something comes in and it's like, you know, a dramatic signing of the ledger or, you know, like a closing of a locker sounds like a cannon shot. You know, they're obviously making fun of movies like Blue Steel and Point Break and the Bad Boys movies and that kind of thing. But at the same time, it's still a really funny and clever story.
It is so much. I mean, all you have to think about is that opening sequence of him, quote unquote, getting fired and sent off to Sanford, yeah, where he's, you see things like him getting stabbed by Santa Claus. You see his superior coming and telling him that he has to leave, to then call in the next superior, who calls in the next one by just looking at the door.
Yeah, and you want me to bring him all the way down here? Yeah.
In walks, oh, why can't I remember his name right now? My brain is just mush at this point.
It's Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy.
Yes.
So we have already seen the Hobbit dude. Why, my brain is just crap right now.
Martin Freeman.
Stephen Coogan and now Bill Nighy all telling Simon Pegg, you're fired.
Yep.
To only go to Sanford to meet... did I mention my brain is complete mush right now?
Too much. He goes and he meets...
as his new commanding officer. Why can't I remember his name?
Commanding officer. It's Jim Broadbent.
Jim Broadbent, and the movie just takes you into a realm of self-referential glory.
Yes.
And I mean, to me, this movie is just perfect in the one moment where after they've had their, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg have had their true bonding in their pub night out, they go home. I mean, he goes over to Nick Frost's place, and Nick Frost, in a moment of reaching out to his friend to try and help him, he says, look, Point Break or Bad Boys 2. He asks, well, which one do you think I prefer? He's like, no, which one are we watching first?
First, yeah.
And that's what it is. Which one are we watching first? Because yes, we are seeing all of those right now.
Yes, yes. And like, and it's watching this movie, it's kind of funny because this is the kind of movie that you could watch endlessly and just catch more and more and more things. Like the one thing, first of all, I tend to love any scene where the Andys are on screen, Andy Wainwright and Andy Cartwright, played by Patty Considine and Rafe Spall, and just how antagonistic they are. There's a moment where they're talking with, and they hate Nicholas Angel, that's the Simon Pegg character, for reasons that we never actually understand. But they're just not wanting to follow up on his police work. And, you know, when he's like, what do you think? He goes, he accuses them of not listening to him and being childish. And he says, what makes you think that it was murder? And Nicholas Angel just goes, skid marks. And without missing a beat, Andy Wainwright goes, well, now who's being childish? And I just, things like that. I love that. And do you know, I don't know what I had never noticed this before. I don't know why in the world I had never noticed this before. But what is the name of the group that completely, that like controls the town? What is the name of the group?
The NWA.
The NWA! I'm like, oh, my God, how did I never notice that they were called the NWA? That's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant to call this bunch of old, stodgy, white British people the NWA. That is pure genius. That's the kind of thing I want. Like, as as ludicrousness as the FP is going to stick with me, I want something this clever, you know?
Ryan, it's gonna happen. 10 years from now, you're going to see a movie, maybe directed by the next Edgar Wright, and you will laugh at a joke no one else will because you saw the FP.
Yeah, okay, let's go with that.
And on a side note, just to make it even deeper, I was reading into Edgar Wright's next film, which is coming out...
this year?
No, it's not Edgar Wright. Shit, I mix them up. It's the new Seth Rogen movie, The World's End.
Oh, yeah,
is
that,
or The War, This Is the End?
Yep.
J-Tro is in that movie.
Oh, God, no. Oh, I'm not seeing that. That's it.
I don't know how big a part I don't he care. Has, but he's in there somewhere.
I don't care. This was your choice, so you get to pick some sort of a takeaway. You know, people. I think people should just see Hot Fuzz. It is that awesome. But what is your takeaway from this movie that you would keep and, you know, that you think people should see it for?
Oh, I mean, there's so many things. I think number one, and the weirdest part, is this was the moment that I loved so much. Nicholas Angel fly kicking an old woman with a shotgun at the beginning of the end of the movie when they have their full fight out. I mean, you've also got Timothy Dalton, who I think, like, how has he been? It feels like no one noticed him ever. Between Bond and this, for some reason, it might be my gap in cinema knowledge, but it just feels that way for some reason.
I think that's for good reason, really. I'm not exactly the biggest fan of TD, but he was also he did a voice in Toy Story 3. He was the Hedgehog.
Yes, he was.
That's right.
I like that so
Are you
much.
Classically trained? Well, there we go. There's some movies that you can watch if you're just looking for something dumb to laugh at. Even with my disdain for Pitch Perfect aside, some fun, silly movies to basically let you look at Hollywood and flip them the bird and say, we are not going to go swallow the crap you want to feed us now. We're going to stay at home and watch our own crap. You can, you know, go with Hot Fuzz, or I guess you could go with the FP or Pitch Perfect if you really had to, but I'd leave that up to you. That is episode 79 of the Matinee Cast. Come on back on Monday, March 11th for episode 80. We're going to be talking about Oz the Great and Powerful. Andrew's website can be found at gmanreviews.com. Do you have anything coming up?
Well, I mean, the next Blind Spot should be up by then, and I'll be talking about Fritz Lang's M, which I have sitting down to watch.
That is a good one. I'll definitely, like, I'll be plugging that on my own site when I put up my Blind Spot, and I'll definitely look forward to what you have to say to him.
And also, I'm going to be announcing my upcoming marathon of some John Ford films I haven't seen yet.
Oh, okay. Well, enjoy that. I'll look forward to reading those as well. And where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at GMareReviews on Twitter, and that's basically all I think you need to know.
I would agree. My site, of course, is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find them. You can find back episodes by going to thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them on Listen, on Apple's podcasting app, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and the iTunes Music Store. The easiest way to find me is to search for my name, Ryan McNeil. There's also widgets in the sidebar of my blog where you can subscribe and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on the FP, on Pitch Perfect, on Hot Fuzz, or on directors returning to their roots can be left in the comment section of the blog. You can email ryan@thematinee.ca or find me on Twitter, where I'm matinee_ca, and on Facebook, where it's facebook.com/darkmatinee. Andrew Robinson, any final thoughts before I let you go?
It's for the ducks.
Jesus, Murphy. For G-Man, I'm Ryan. We'll see you at the Matinee.